This is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
To think that this was John Doe.
It's like the argument about the argument in part. No, we fought an entire goddamn war. States' right to do what?
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Ford.
Thanks for tuning in to Solidarity Journal on WAZE 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. So today we'll hear from Bruce Taylor, teacher and activist in Carpentersville, Illinois, about his group, Youth Labor Committee, and the students there at the high school, what actions they've been taking against Classic Factory in Jordan that makes merchandise for places such as Walmart, Sears, and Kohl's, and many other major brands, and the human rights violations that are happening at that factory. Also, had a chance to sit down with Luke McCann with Peoria Theater to find out why it's closing down, what people can do to help, and what's stored in the future for independent films in the Peoria area. And finally, I spoke with Tammy Ivey, the new president over at Parks Union AFSCME, and what changes are being done under the new presidency and the negotiations with Park and the state. Throughout today's program, there'll be featured music by Tina Sparkle, Teodora, and SkyMall, who all played this past weekend at Art Show. And there's a month-long extravaganza all this September, which is presenting work by Chris Keller, a self-taught artist currently living in central Illinois. So Art Show will be having live music and art every Friday and Saturday of this month, along with Chris and his paintings that he'll be doing during the show. There'll be guest artists each weekend, and there'll be raffles at the end of each evening, with all the proceeds being donated to TAPS Animal Shelter. Also, Broken Tree Coffee will be providing refreshments on the 16th and the 30th. The next show will be on September 9th at 8 p.m. The performance acts will include Corey Flanagan, Larry Harms Trio, and Gushing Cloud. Also, Tora Edwards, who is part of the Save the Peoria Lakes petition, will have a march up to the Pier Marquette Hotel in downtown Peoria in response to the public forum, which is taking place there. Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon and an Army Corps of Engineers will be at this forum. The reason for this march is that Tora is wanting to get the public and others aware of the petition, and the petition itself is asking to stop the building of the islands on the river. So you can meet up with her on October 4th at 5 p.m. in Liberty Park Pavilion on the riverfront, and then you'll march up to the meeting. So stay tuned to the Solidarity Journal and prepare to be radicalized. listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. Recently, Change.org has gotten over 100,000 people to join a campaign asking Target, Hanes, Macy's, and Sears to pull their orders from Classic Factory and Jordan. This is in response to the reports of women being raped and the brutal working conditions that they are in. This topic has been highly publicized for a while now, and because of that, the factory conditions have improved moderately. But there's still a lot of problems for the women that work in the Classic Factory. So I had a chance to sit down and talk with friend and activist Bruce Taylor, who is a teacher up at Dundee Crown High School in Carpentersville, Illinois. We talked about what was happening in Jordan and what his campaign in his area was doing to get people more aware of the human rights violations that Sears and other businesses were doing with their Classic Factory.
Yeah, today I got Bruce Taylor in Carpentersville, Illinois, sitting down with Solidarity Journal. And I've been looking at some of the stuff you've been doing, and there's so much to talk about. But I guess one of the things we could focus on is what you're doing right now with the Youth Labor Committee. As far in regards to what the Classic Factory in Jordan, the sweatshop, the human rights violations it's been committing against the women there, the workers there. And could you maybe go into a bit of information about what the Youth Labor Committee is and what it has been doing to get people aware of what's going on at this factory in Jordan that makes merchandise for, like, Walmart and Sears and Target and Macy's and Kohl's?
Yeah, sure. So the Youth Labor Committee is a group that I started here at Dundee Crown. This is our second year now, so we were a full year last year. And with Sears in our backyard, we decided to, you know, kind of focus on working with them to adjust or to address some of these issues. You know, any major retailer is just corruption run amok, so it doesn't really matter where we focus, but with Sears just a couple of miles away from us, we figured that would be a good start. Youth Labor Committee is mostly focused on anti-sweatshop activism, and this is a high school, a public high school, and we believe that we might be the only, or if we're not the only, then there's less than a handful of groups like ourselves out there that are really pushing for this type of stuff. So it's been a pretty powerful 2 years. In relation to the Classic Factory in Jordan, it's supplying for Walmart, Hanes, Macy's, Target, and Land's End. And Land's End, of course, is wholly owned by Sears. So we've been working that angle. Our goal remains that we want to sit down and begin a dialogue with Sears to address these issues, and work together with them to make sure that these are all eradicated. In the 2 years now, I guess, that we've been going, we met Sears once, which would have been last December. We went over to their corporate headquarters. They told us that we would have time in a boardroom to meet with them, and they intercepted us in the parking lot. Were not interested in talking with us. They had employees driving through our meeting and telling our students that if they didn't move, they were going to get hurt. The reps that came out from Sears were just texting the entire time, told us to just refer back to their global, their global compliance guidelines. Just to show that Sears is somehow all in, you know, in the correct light with what they're doing. But now this, all of these allegations coming out of Jordan, which are partners at the Institute for Global Labor in Pittsburgh, are finding us, Charlie Kernaghan and Barbara Briggs. They've been kind of busting the story pretty aggressively, and it stands in staunch contradiction to all of their global compliance guidelines. Factories in Jordan, and they are recruiting young seamstresses from all over the world, from Bangladesh, from Nepal and Sri Lanka and Egypt, And it's always the same story. These women pay a huge sum of money for them, which might be $1,200, $1,400, to get the permit to come in, the work permit. You know, their families have no money, of course, so they have to go in deep into debt or mortgage off any whatever pitiful land holdings they might have, which they were probably growing, you know, some sort of subsistence level of food on. Now they don't even have that option anymore. Just to try to send their daughter abroad to make a little bit of money and bring it back and invest in their future. They end up getting here into Jordan, and their documents are all confiscated from them, and they're forced to live on the premises of the factory. And they're just getting repeatedly raped. We've got documentation of that going back since at least 2007. Anil Santo is the manager of the factory, and he is being held, well, he was being held on suspicion of rape and raping multiple women. Now he's apparently fled to Sri Lanka because of the heat that's on him. So it's been a pretty atrocious story. And, you know, we're just trying to raise as much awareness as we can with our end goal to sit down with Sears and get them to really come clean on it and start fixing this problem. The corporate rhetoric is always the same. It's, we're looking into it. We've got independent, investigations underway. And once the data comes back in some, obscenely long time, like 5 or 6 months from now, once they say they have adequate data, then they'll make some determination. These women are getting raped and brutalized, and a lot of these women are Muslim. And if you're raped as a Muslim woman and your virginity is taken, then a whole litany of other problems comes about, where you may be ostracized from your family, you may never be able to be married, you may be thrown out of your community. I mean, it's just this whole. These women essentially feel like they're dead. And this is obviously not downplaying any woman who would have had to go through such atrocious situations, but just reiterating that these women's circumstances are perhaps in some light, a little more dire than what we might consider.
And I also saw that the Global Labor and Human Rights, what have they been doing as far as what's happening there in the Classic Factory?
Yeah, so they funnel a lot of the information out of Jordan, so they get on a lot of phone calls, or they translate a lot of testimony from these young women. They're putting the pressure on the managers. This guy that I mentioned, Anil Santa, he's left the country, and so we just did an interview 2 days ago down on WBEZ's Worldview concerning this, and the question was posed, well, now this guy's back in Sri Lanka, is the situation fine? Well, no, it's not anywhere near fine, because the present managers, as Charlie at the Institute is breaking this news all the time, they're raping and brutalizing the women just the same. So, without that very courageous reporting that they're doing, they're really the only funnel of information that these women have. And that's been tons of hours of groundwork here that they're doing and we're helping them with. And also in Jordan, in country, they're going over there and doing work there. So the funnel and the information that they've brought to the surface has been reported in the Wall Street Journal and Huffington Post, and change.org has a petition with about 140 plus thousand signatures on it now. We were just, like I said, on Chicago Public Radio 2 days ago, and we're just continuing from here.
And is a lot of this stemmed from the U.S. Jordan Free Trade Agreement in some ways, with the as Jordan emerging as a key supplier in that?
Yeah, I mean, it's got everything to do with that. So, forgive me, I don't have the figures in front of me, but the amount of export from Jordan has
1.2 billion.
Yeah, it's over $1 billion now, right? It's like 1.06 billion per year. And I think that number has jumped 5 or 6 fold since the treaty was enacted under Clinton. So they become a key supplier in the garment industry for the United States. And that's when the story becomes a little more complicated, and you can kind of see why these big factories would, or these big, like Walmart and Targets and Sears and everybody, they would just prefer to sweep all this under the rug because they're getting dirt cheap labor. I think the average wage for these women is 61 cents an hour. We were in the Sears retail over at Woodfield Mall in Schaumburg, and finding the polar fleeces that were made at the Classic factory are retailing for $40 to $50 each. So, you know, you can imagine the labor costs on each one of those garments is probably a dollar or so at most. Mm-hmm. And then you're maybe factor in a couple bucks for raw materials and a couple bucks for shipping, and you're looking at maybe a total garment cost of maybe $5 or $6. They're selling it for upwards of 10 times that, you know. So all of this plays right back into the free trade agreement with Jordan, and they want to keep that pipeline going right into these to the shelving space of these companies, and they're happy to support it because they get a 1,000% markup, you know. So
even if we stop what's happening at the Classic factory in Jordan, there, it's not the main source as far as the human rights violations around the world. I mean, this is happening in so many other places. What is, like, the dangerous and destructive aspects of a global economy that we're running here with free trade, and how does it play into the exploitation?
Yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, when you say that, you're very correct in saying that this is not the main, you know, like the largest violator, however you'd like to say it, of human rights abuses. And when you're talking about sweatshops and whatever, or, you know, these forced labor conditions. And I'm surprised that people never really make this jump. And it's not the factories, it's the companies that are employing the factories. I mean, when you want to look at the people who are causing these violations, you got to go back here to Walmart and go to Target and go to Macy's or Polo or, you know, any of these companies that we just take for granted. They think that they're just, you know, we hear their explanation that, well, they're all the way on the other side of the planet. We have independent monitors going in there and trying to audit them. And once we find something out, if it's wrong, we'll, you know, we'll obviously cancel that. That's all garbage. They could set the standards from the start and never have these issues. Yep. You know, they're the ones that are causing all these violations, you know, and that's what I think is the most pressing matter. And that's what we're hoping to do with this whole case here. If we can get these people thrown in jail and get these companies to start working with us, then that is a step down the right path. You know what I mean? We're not in this very ambiguous path of cover-ups and, you know, data gathering that takes a year to figure something out when already we have all the testimony we ever would need. You know, the redundancies are only put in place to protect profits, and that's what we're trying to fight against.
So what has the reception been like there in Carpentersville, or I should say at Dundee Crown High School? Is Sears a fairly large, a big presence in that area, in that county?
Yeah, Sears has quite a strong presence. They're only a couple miles down the road, and they're within our school boundaries. So, you know, we have a strong relationship with them, and in the sense that they're right in our community. And we really, as members of the Youth Labor Committee, really want to continue to build that relationship and see it develop into something where we're working hand in hand with them to create a more just and sane global economy.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other committees in your area or groups that are involved with this?
We've started another chapter at our sister high school, which is Jacobs High School in Algonquin. They had their first meeting this past Wednesday, and they have weekly meetings. We'll be doing presentations between the schools and getting the support to build. And you know, it's hard to create secondary chapters. So if there's any listeners to this program that are interested in, you know, if you're a high school teacher, if you just want to get one going yourself, feel free to give me a buzz, and we'll obviously be there to support you. But we're really excited to have Jacobs starting to work. You know, they have a school of 2,600 students there as well. So we will now be getting this information to 5,000 plus students, which is quite a substantial population.
Has there been any call for a boycott?
Hasn't yet, but you know, that's obviously something that we would never take out of our deck of cards. I mean, it's a boycott here, a local boycott. What's it really going to do? Not that much, right? But I mean, if we go down and we start spreading the word in Chicago and on the internet and we get a change.org petition calling for something like that, that's when you really start talking about something serious. We don't want it to get to that point because we're shocked that they don't want to talk to us. I mean, we know why they don't want to, because they don't want this to be known, but we're giving them the opportunity and we are always here to talk with them and they're just refusing. So this is going on almost a year now that we've waited to talk with them.
Here in the United States, in Pennsylvania recently, there was the Hershey plant that was bringing in foreign students on a visa program, I believe, where they'd have to pay and they'd come work and do other things. And now it's coming out that they've been, for decades now, they've been exploited and treated very unfairly. And you know, that's right here in the United States. And, you know, just imagine when it's not in the backyard, such as with Jordan.
Exactly right. I mean, that's a perfect example of what's been happening over at Hershey's. It's the same thing. And, you know, like the upper crust pizza chain out there on the East Coast, I think it's out in Boston, same problem. They were bringing in Brazilian workers from one town, all undocumented. They were stealing all of their paperwork and then treating them like slaves. The same thing going on over there at Hershey, you know, which is, you know, this iconic feel good, like 4th of July American, you know, chocolate company. And they're bringing in, you know, foreign workers, who have been duped thinking that they're coming here on some sort of a beneficial work exchange. And now they're getting thrown into this factory to work 12, 14 hour shifts with hardly any pay and no breaks and all that stuff. It's the world around. It's not just in Jordan.
Yeah. Is there any future plans, for yourself as far as doing any action? I know you're probably going to be really busy with the youth labor committee on with Sears and the petition.
Yeah, I mean, right now we're really focusing pretty aggressively on Sears and really working, you know, to try to bust the story and get it known so that we can get some. We need to make some progress. I mean, this is a campaign that we think is easily winnable. It's absolutely atrocious what's going on, and what it really comes down to is people either know this stuff and realize that eventually they're going to have to care, or they just continue to be ignorant and just act like, you know, shopping at Woodfield Mall is somehow okay and there's, you know, no problems with that. And we think that as soon as people, how could you not, you know, be caught up in a story where, you know, 16-year-old women are being raped brutally over and over again to make clothing at Land's End? Nobody who shops at Land's End would support that. You know, nobody who shops at Target would support that, or at Walmart, or, you know, at Macy's. It's probably a fairly safe assumption to think that most of the people listening to this program are already relatively aware of this, or at least of a mindset where if as soon as they did learn about it, they would stop, right? I mean, so we don't necessarily need to convert the listeners. So this is a plea straight to the listeners to take this out to their friends and their family. And, you know, the next time you go shopping and, you know, like Black Friday is coming up in a couple months, which I think is the most pathetic day of the entire year. Just think before you shop. I mean, we don't need anything else ever. We're just awash in goods that we have no use for. And these goods are being produced on the backs and the sweat and the fear of these young men and women overseas who are like treated like slaves. If there's any teachers listening, be brave. Stand up for what's going on. I mean, you know, I understand the situation. It's tough. The job market is tough and everything, but you can't back away from it. I mean, if I had backed away from this stuff, this group would have never started and we would have never got where we are today. You've got to educate your kids. You got to educate your community and your neighbors and your friends and your family, because nobody in their right mind would support any of this, but nobody chooses to learn about it because I think we all know what's going on. People just don't have the courage to stop and think about it for a second, because then you really do have to put a lot into question, don't you, about your own life and what you do for fun and your own, even your own social interactions and your social relationships. We take consumption out of that question, you're really altering quite a bit of the fabric of our society, but that fabric has been stitched on the blood of the rest of the world.
If you want to learn more, go to Youth Labor Committee at ylcnet.org. And if you want to sign the petition, go to change.org and look for the Classic Factory petition. When we come back, I'll be sitting down with Luke McCann at the Peoria Theater and talking about why the Peoria Theater is closing and what people in the community could do to possibly help. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal on WACU 90.7 FM. Listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. Recently, Luke McCann announced that the Peoria Theater would be closing come September 15th. The theater has been open for 2 years now, playing films that range from art house to documentaries. And isn't your typical movie theater. It has served alcohol, and the atmosphere itself was much different from many of the other theaters in the Peoria area. So, I had a chance to sit down with Luke and talk and ask about why this was happening and what was stored in the future for Peoria Theater and independent films in the Peoria area. Today I'm here with Luke McCann at the Peoria Theater, and recently it's been posted that the theater is going to be closing on September 15th, kind of a little bit out of nowhere for a lot of people, and so I'm here today kind of to find out exactly why that is, why it's closing, and the possibility of trying to find relocation. But first, I guess we should hear from Luke himself, kind of talking about why the theater is going to be closing. So thanks, Luke, for at least taking the time to talk with me about this. So can you explain why this is happening for people who are now just hearing about it or have heard about it but are still not sure why it's happening or what's going on?
Sure. I guess the reason, you know, basically, well, we've been here for 2.5 years, and we opened up in February of 2009, and you know, we have a really good deal with Landmark. We like being at Landmark. It's a good place for us. But basically, you know, it's come to the point where they want to make more money with this space. And, you know, at this point, we're basically not paying them enough that they think that they would probably be able to make more money off of this space just by turning it back into, you know, I think by turning it back into, you know, two of their regular movie theaters. You know, they would be willing to keep us in here if we were to, when it comes down to it, more than double our rent, which is about the number that they think they would make if they took the two theaters back over. So as long as we were going to make, you know, could convince them that or give them a check at the end of the month that is what they think that they would be making here anyway, then that's fine. Whether it's us or whether it's them just taking it back over, they want the money. I get it. That's the bottom line for everybody. But, you know, it's not really feasible for us at this point to pay that sort of rent.
You said they doubled the rent or tripled or...
It would be more than doubling the rent. And, I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but if we wanted to stay, that's what would happen. Starting October 1st. Okay. So, you know, and hence we're closing September 15th, a little bit before October 1st. So, and, you know, they'll take back over operations, you know, probably right on that day. And to my knowledge, you know, take it back over and do, like I said, what they were doing before we came, which is to just use these two for, you know, their regularly scheduled movies. Probably not use our concession stand, and I'm almost positive not keep our liquor license, which they think they'd have a hard time renewing that liquor license anyway, just because then Willow and the Rave would want one too if Landmark had one at their movie theater. But, you know, they've got a couple other, you know, reasons and stuff, and I, for the most part, I get it. This has worked from time to time. We have sold out one or both auditoriums on given nights, whether it's our Lebowski night. All of our local sort of movies have done really well. The seven or eight things I've done that was either a local filmmaker or somebody local was in a movie have all, you know, I mean, they've all sold out at least one theater, if not both. But here's the thing. 90% of the time, 95% of the time, we're just a regular movie theater. It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or a Thursday, or even a Friday or Saturday night, and we're just showing a movie. And we're not selling out those tickets. We, you know, when you got these huge movies, your Twilights and your Captain Americas, that at any given movie theater on a Friday night and a Saturday night are selling out a couple of shows, think about how many of, and we're talking about 10 or 15 movies at any given time, how many of them are either a sequel or a remake. We did this the other day, right off the top of our heads, 50% of the movie's out right now. You got a Final Destination.
In the United States, too.
Right. You got a Final Destination 5, Spy Kids 4, Fright Night's a remake, Conan the Barbarian. That's 4 right off the top of my head. So you're already guaranteed to 50% of the movies, give or take, are not original ideas. These are things that they're just literally regurgitating. And that's, I don't think I've ever, in all the independent films, I've never played a sequel. You know what I mean? They don't even make sequels to these things. It's an original idea. It's one and done. And they're usually, that's why they're critically acclaimed, because they're such unique ideas. They're usually really, you know, good, if not, you know, maybe lesser known actors. Just, they're great ideas. And then when you, obviously you take a lot into account the fact that a quarter of what we're doing is a documentary. There's no sequel to a documentary. You know what I mean? It's just, that's the way it is. And these foreign films, you know, that's probably a fifth of what we do. But yeah, it, you know, this is a working class town, and I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that it's not, Peoria is not extremely supportive of the arts in general. You can really only count on a couple of thousand people that are going to support the arts. And when you're talking about a metropolitan area, that within 20 miles of Landmark, there's a million people, and you're talking about a couple thousand people supporting the arts, I mean, what chance do you have? That's why we've tried to supplement our income through events. We're an independent film and event center. The regular movie theaters don't have memberships. They don't have liquor. They don't have to have music concerts and fundraisers for, you know, local places or house the biggest TV in town to hope that somebody will rent it out for the Super Bowl. They don't have to do that because, again, on Friday night, there's 150 people going to the movie because they saw the commercial 150 times. So we've had to supplement our income, and that's been great, because if we have a concert where 75 people come in, that's maybe 50 of those people had never been in here and haven't seen a movie here and wouldn't have known about it. Now they saw a movie poster on the wall and they go, oh, this place is pretty cool. We can serve beer. And I see them again the next week because they saw such and such live here. So that has helped us in the past, and it was great for us. you know, just, I guess, to go back to the thing of, you know, 95% of the time we're showing movies. And if you're not seeing a commercial for this on TV, or it's just not supportive of the arts, or you've never seen a foreign film in your life, or why should I watch a documentary because I can do that on Discovery Channel, these are the kind of things that people in this town would think. This is, are not the kinds of thing that people in San Francisco, Seattle, Madison, Wisconsin, or 100, 200 other cities in this country would think. This place would fly without the blink of an eye in 150 other cities in this country.
So have you ever thought about what would be the way of getting people to understand the independent, or the ones that aren't mainstream, the importance to them? Because the mainstream films are just, a lot of times, I'm not saying the independent films are not, but just are lacking in any creativity.
So the difference between like a mainstream movie and like an independent film, we did a film that was called Forks Over Knives, which was basically about eating better, putting, you know, what you eat is going to affect how you feel, maybe the diseases that you may or may not get, you know, your immune system. And basically the tagline for that film was, caution, this movie could save your life. And I know that people came up to the counter and were buying tickets for that, who told me that like they needed to see this movie. Or I heard this a lot, I should have wished I'd have seen that movie 20 years ago. You know what I mean? And that movie very well possibly could have saved some of the people's lives that came into this theater. And that's the kind of service that we're providing, more than just a movie theater. I'm pretty sure that nobody's lives was saved because they went and saw Cars 2. You know, that's just not... We're providing a community service. You can put art on the walls. You can do a fundraiser here. And yeah, I mean, you can watch a movie and sometimes they're a comedy. And, you know, you can see a rock and roll band or whatever. It's not all serious business. But this is a literally a community service. This could be sponsored by... you know, there's places like this around the country that are non-for-profits. Or this could be... what is it, like an endowment for the arts type of place? This isn't just a movie theater. Like, you're already thinking about it wrong if you think this is a movie theater. That's why the byline is Independent Film and Event Center.
Yeah. So the core people that would just gravitate towards this, or that really represents them in so many ways, like the people who look past Cars 2 and Spy Kids 4 and those who... listen to not just what's on the radio musically and create their own music, create their own art. This was supposed to be something for them to come to.
And at the same time, open up, you know, the eyes and minds to people that, you know, weren't into this kind of thing before. That's the cool thing. Another cool thing about this is I think that we created a market. People that might not normally... care or didn't have any reason to look into these movies because there was no way they were going to see them anyway. And now we actually not only saw if there was a market here, which there is, but actually created a market. And that in turn is, I mean, that's good for the economy. That's good for Landmark. That's good for us. That gets those people now searching on different websites. Maybe now they clicked on the banner ad that's on the side of the website and they bought something off of that. Like, believe it or not, that's actually good for the entire economy that we opened up a movie theater that did something different that people wouldn't have normally done. That actually creates money for everybody, or creates wheels rolling in whatever direction for everybody. It's certainly not a bad thing. And if all they get out of it is, you know, hanging out for 2 hours on a Friday night or whatever day of the week, I don't know, then that's good too. Movies are an escape. They always say that, like, you know, movie theaters or a lot of entertainment businesses are kind of recession-proof because people, you don't have to spend an arm and a leg to go there, first of all. And secondly, it's an escape. You can drop $6-7 and get out of whatever you're in for 2 hours. So, I mean, I don't think the economy had a whole lot to do with this. Was this the best time to open a new business? Was in arguably the worst recession maybe ever? Nobody would probably tell you that, but you know, we didn't have to spend a whole lot of money to advertise because going back to the word of mouth thing, and it's a good escape.
So the theater is going to be closing down here soon. So what's next?
Is that the relocation thing would be
you know, hey, we're accepting donations, and if you want to raise, we want to raise some funds. It's not totally out of, you know, the realm that this might pop up and under the same management. I'd love to do it. You know, me personally, I loved doing this. I like the what we offered. I like what we stood for. I like that it was casual. I like that there was booze. I like that we had, you know, couches and it was just easy going and you don't have kids. Every single thing that we had, I liked. I would love to relocate. I'm not sure if there's another place in town that would be able to have all the infrastructural needs that we need and be able to have about the same rent. Frankly, I'm pretty doubtful about that. If a couple of investors want to step forward and let us start back up with probably maybe a little bit, you know, about the same amount of money as it took us to start this in the first place, you already got a guy that can run it. I already have the movie contacts. We already have the website if we call it Peoria Theater. I mean, a lot of the stuff we had to work on and do at first, done. It's already done. You know what I mean? I know what I'm doing. But to find another building that has just a lot of the high ceilings, a projection booth of some kind where we can move a projector in, a place where I can mount, you know, regular home entertainment projectors so that we can do DVD stuff. Can we do rock bands there? Is there one theater or two theaters? Is there a lobby? Where can I put the concessions? Because that's where we're going to make a lot of our money. Can we get a liquor license? These are all things that make it look easy when you walk in the door to Peoria Theater, but these, you know, those are hard to come by. And even if all that's possible, is the rent ideally equal to or less than what we're paying now? To meet all of those, that's a big task. But if we were to have a couple investors come forward that are behind this, that, you know, we could make Landmark continue to work if we had a couple of investors that want to, you know, invest. Then we could, you know, make this, continue to just make it a go here. There's definitely promise, and that's why I'm considering opening it somewhere. If I had completely been like, well, didn't work, we're out of here, you know, good riddance Peoria, thanks for nothing, then I wouldn't be entertaining the idea of moving. I think that this could still happen.
What Luke and others at the Peoria Theater have done for the past few years will be dearly missed in Peoria. But as he stated before, there is a chance for it to keep going. If you have any suggestions, or if you'd like to be one of these investors to help the theater stay alive, please contact Luke at the Peoria Theater Facebook group or on the website peoriatheater.com. When we come back, we'll sit down and hear from Tammy Ivey, the new president of AFSCME at Park. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal on WAZU. 8.7 FM. Listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. As a lot of listeners may know to this show, that I've covered a lot of things dealing with the unions, from here in Peoria up to Madison, Wisconsin. So I decided to go to my own union here in Peoria at Park and talk with Tammy Ivey, the new president at the union, and find out what's going on with negotiations at the state level and with Park.
What is one of the big things that's on the table right now for your, once you've entered to the presidency at the AFSCME?
Right now we're wanting Park to better wage, higher wage than what we do, for what we do. We want a raise in our pay because we went 4 years without a raise, and it's time that we deserve a raise. We do a combination of CNA and a LPN's job to combine together, and what wages that we get is just minimum wage, and it's unspeakable, you know, for what we do. So we're in a contract this time around. We're going to go ahead and go for, we're waiting for them to decide what's going to happen in Springfield, and if they still get their budgeting from Springfield, we're going to go for a raise.
Who are they as far as coming, dealing with the negotiations in Springfield?
We're wanting the representatives to look at across the board on what they're doing for the disability. When they cut, there's like they want to do a 6% cut in disability, the people who work for disability, and the elderlies. And we did a lobby down there in April trying to fight that 6% cut because they've got $600 million sitting in a little account somewhere down here, and we would like to see them touch that instead of touching the people who work for disability, and the elderly.
Why is it that they're not touching that $600 million?
That was the question on the table, and then someone, they could not answer.
As far as they would not, or just couldn't answer?
Would not. Yeah. It wasn't couldn't, they wouldn't. When Eunice was at Park, I heard him tell the clients that he would do everything possible in his power that he would see no cuts come. Because we had the girl that works out at Walmart, she's in a wheelchair. She greets you. She owns her, she's buying her own house. She has her own bank account working off of Walmart. She hires a nurse to come in and take care of her. If they was to cut, she's going to lose her house. She's going to have to go into a facility. She would lose her nurse. She would lose her job because they were going to cut her, and she wouldn't have the fundings to be able to live on her own.
I think the cuts also, people need to realize or not, are being made on people who've already made as many concessions, or have been making concessions for a long time, have been getting a lot of cuts as and coming from other areas.
Right, and I agree with you there too. It's ridiculous. But Eunice promised him. So when I cornered him and I told him what he told the consumers, at first he denied that he was there. First he denied. I was like, yeah, you were. Because you know why you were there? I was there. I took the day off to drive. It was my day off. I took, Park paid me, but I picked up consumers to go to that rally, to listen to you guys promise what you promised them. You know, when you make a promise, especially to disability, they stand to that because they don't know any different. That's why you should never tell a consumer anything or a person with disability that you're going to do something and then don't do it, because their trust is that short because of who they are and what they go through. Because they've had promise made after promise after broken, and they're tired. You know, they want to live just like we want to live, with good standards. But look at our pays. Look at how we struggle. So, you know, it's just, it's a ripple effect. It affects a lot of people. And the disability, it hurts them the most because they ain't got much fundings as it is anyway. What little fundings they do got, y'all want to nip it and snatch it and all that. Look at the elderly. They were the ones that billed. And then you want to take from them. That's what I asked him, man. I was snapping at him. He finally said, I got to go. I got to be over at the state capitol for a meeting because we're all going to go in and join. We caught Joanne over there. But see, Joanne wasn't on it. She wasn't on the committee. Eunice is on the committee. He can vote. So when I asked him, I said, so is it yes that you're going to vote for this 6% cut? He said, that's not what I said. I said, okay, so you're telling me, no, you're not going to do that. He goes, that's not what I said either. I said, so what are you telling us? He goes, I got to go. I said, okay, you know that nice little emblem that sits on the back of your seat? We'll see next year if you're sitting in there. And that's exactly what I told him. Because I will tell everybody, don't vote for Yunus. Don't. He's out for, they're out for themselves. They're not out for the people. And just like Afni, Afni's out for the people. They fight for the people.
What would this cut do to the individuals who have disabilities?
Too much. It's not like they get a whole lot as it is now. And a lot of people don't realize when we work with the disability of what they go through and what we have to do for them, and they count on us, and they're the one that pays us to take care of them. So if they keep cutting and taking away from their fundings and their money that they get every month, then it's sad, really sad, because then they're not going to be able to pay us, because they're not going to have enough money. Their medical's getting cut. They're getting cut left and right on other stuff. You know, that's their means of living, because that's the only thing they have, because they can't do nothing else. And so the day program helps them to be as independent as they can with our help to show them how they can do that. And if you start cutting, then there isn't going to be anything out there for them.
Now, would that have any effect also on their housing?
Yes. It'd be housing, clothing, medical, food. Yeah, housing's real bad. Because if they take the fundings away from them, then Park has a problem of paying, because we're independent, we're a non-profit organization. So if they take that 6% and cut, then that takes away from Park, so Park has to find more funding. And that's why Park says that they can't give us a raise, because they have no money. That's not true.
Has there ever been a strike at Park, or is that even possible?
It could happen.
Because people...
It'd be devastating.
How would that look, I guess? Have you ever thought
about it? I explained to some of the workers that I've been talking to and being down in Springfield, and I even represented this to Johan Gordon, because Johan Gordon has a disability, family member, brother.
Yeah.
He has a disability.
I remember.
And my question to her was, you know what we do. And she does, because her brother has to have the same taken care of that what we do. The only thing I would love to see is Afni, or at least our union, or in every other facility like Trinity's Afni, places up in Chicago's Afni that do the same work. Down in Springfield itself, in the head of Springfield, they have different facilities down there that do the same the quality care that we give to just people with disabilities. Get as a huge group and go down and fight the house about changing the pay rate of what we do. LPNs get $17 an hour. RNs get $23 an hour. CNAs are making $14.75 an hour. We're at, just in the last 2 years, 2 years back, we was only at $7.25 an hour. Okay? And day program, different field. I mean, they do what they do. But in-house, you guys are there. You guys do the beddings, the clothing, the meds. Park day program don't give meds. They have a nurse right on site. Mm-hmm. But you guys give meds. When you work in the house, when we're DSP trained, we give meds. We cook, we clean, we toilet, we bathe, we educate, we sometimes have to counsel because some of them have behaviors. So those job qualifications run under different license of people. We're licensed, actually, because we're mandated by law. We are mandated by law. So you're changing all this stuff up of what we got to do, and we can get in trouble if we don't, you know, because we're mandated by law to report. And we're still getting $8.50 an hour. But yeah, we're doing all these jobs. So I think we have to focus on Springfield itself, not so much as Park. Park's going to pay anyway, because if the state changed the pay rate of direct service providers, then they have to pay anyway. There's no choice. They don't have a choice. It's mandated by law that the pay rate of that, but I think we have to fight Springfield. That's the only way I'm going to see a pay raise change. Because
Going at the state.
Hitting the state.
Okay, so staff person comes up to you and says, why do we even have a union? And if we were to get rid of the union, we'd get more done.
Yeah, you're right. Get more, get done. Only certain ones going to benefit. Only certain ones going to benefit. It's been said that's what made me stronger about the union. When I talked to the elderlies, if you wasn't in the clique of certain management, they had what they called a 1, 2, and 3 phase of raises when it comes for your eval. You could be at 3 and only get a nickel or nothing. Every year you come for your eval, it could be like that because your management didn't like you for some reason. Because maybe you spoke out, or you had differences and you wanted them corrected, or you went out to hire over their head. You know, that's just the way it was. But see, the contract stopped all that. Because now me, I feel that we should be on a merit system, because some people don't deserve a raise because they're only there for the paycheck and not the consumers and don't really care a lot about their job. But I wanted in the contract to where it should have been on a merit phase, because we're not like Caterpillar, you know. That's why they have one raise, all raise. But it has to be that way, whether this person alongside of me isn't working as hard as I am, because then it'd be indifference.
Anthony, you would want people to understand about the union at Park, in short, what the union does.
What the union does at Park is prevent them from getting terminated under the wrongful reasons. Not only that, members need to get involved. Don't talk about your union if you don't know what the union's about. You have to know what the union's about in order for you to talk about the union. And if you're not satisfied with it, then you need to address these things. That way we can make an investment.
Thanks for listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM. And if you'd like to hear previous shows, you can always go to radioforall.net and type in Solidarity Journal in the search box. And if you want to hear more Peoria progressive exposés, tune in every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. at WAZU 90.7 FM. So until next time, keep up the resistance.